I'm going to open our sermon with another video again this week. And before I play that for you, though, I'm kind of curious to know how effective these little videos have been. So test your memory here today. So can anyone remember the video that I showed at the beginning of the sermon last Sunday? Let's see if you can go back. Train wreck. Good job. I didn't have to give you my choo-choo clue. Good job. And now, probably the more important question is, can you remember what that symbolized, what we were talking about in the sermon, that video symbolized? Derailment of your life, not just a train, but your life. We've looked at four things. Well done. We've looked at four things. The Proverbs says can derail your life. It would be sex outside of marriage and cheating and harboring a desire to harm someone. Drunkenness. That was our topic last week. All right, then the really test your knowledge now. 2 weeks ago, oh, that's a long time ago. 2 weeks ago, do you remember that opening video? Yes, a knife sharpening, and it symbolized the proverb. You kind of said it there. Iron sharpens iron, right? So again, the idea there is that advice from godly wise people can be a really good thing. Iron can sharpen iron. But then there was also that caution that our tongues can also wound and harm people. So we want to be careful how we give advice and when we give advice. Okay, well, that's encouraging. You did well. Let's take a look at our video for this week. 3 minutes. Here it is for you.
The next stage of the investigation was to find out what one of these subterranean cities looked like. The amount of cement required is extraordinary. For 3 days, they kept pouring, until 10 tons of cement had disappeared down the tubes. After a month, they begin the excavation, led by Professor Louise Forci. It takes weeks to uncover the secret megalopolis of the ants. With the help of mechanical diggers, the scientists remove tons of earth. At last, they begin to see the structure of the city-state. There are subterranean highways connecting the main chambers, and off the main routes are side roads. The paths branch and lead to many fungus gardens and rubbish pits. The tunnels are designed to ensure good ventilation and provide the shortest transport routes. Everything looks like it has been designed by an architect, a single mind. But of course that isn't true. This colossal and complex city was created by the collective will of the ant colony, the superorganism. The structure covers 50 square meters and goes 8 meters into the earth. In its construction, the colony moved 40 tons of soil. Billions of ant loads of soil were brought to the surface. Each load weighed 4 times as much as the worker, and in human terms, was carried 1 kilometer to the surface. It is the equivalent of building the Great Wall of China. It is truly a wonder of the world.
Pretty cool, huh? Yeah, amazing. Wanted to translate one of the statistics there in that video for you into American terms. The narrator said that the ant colonies can reach 50 square meters across and 8 meters down into the earth. So that would translate to 164 feet across, which would be about the size of half of a football field, and 26 feet deep. Pretty incredible. Here's some additional ant facts for you, okay? Facts about ants for you today. Ant fact number one, if you added up the total weight of all of the ants in the world, it would be the same as or even greater than the total weight of all human beings in the world. For every human being, there are about 1 million ants on the planet. That's a big number. Ant fact number two, ants are the longest living of all insects. One queen ant in Idaho is recorded to have lived for 30 years. She obviously did not get in the path of my four-year-old. Ant fact number three, ants can carry objects that are 50 times their own body weight, and then they'll work together in groups to move even heavier objects. All right, so I weigh roughly 180 pounds. That means that if I were an ant, I would be able to lift not 90 pounds, not 900 pounds, I would be able to lift 9,000 pounds. Incredible strength. Next fact, ants move an estimated 50 tons of soil per year in 1 square mile. A ton is 2,000 pounds. So that would be 100,000 pounds of soil that's moved in 1 square mile where ants are at work. Sociobiologist Edward Wilson from Harvard says that ants are the main turners of the soil, more important than earthworms. Three more quick ones. All worker, soldier, and queen ants, obviously, are female. So pretty much any ant you see is going to be a female. Males live only for a few months and have only one job, and you can figure out what that is. Ants. Ant fact number six. Ants have two stomachs. One holds food for themselves, and one holds food to give to others. And then final ant fact for you today. Ants don't have lungs. They breathe through small holes found around their bodies called spiracles, and most ants can actually survive underwater for about 24 hours. I suppose that's good when you live in the ground and there's rain coming down. But anyway, some interesting facts about ants for you today. I know you weren't expecting that. It's really too bad that Danny Tuckett's not here. Thought about him as I was looking at all that. I'm sure he knew all that already. So why am I talking about ants so much this morning? Well, the writer of the biblical book of Proverbs, King Solomon from ancient Israel, had some things to say about ants. He wrote at one point that if you want to live wisely and successfully, then there are some things that we can learn from observing ants. That's why I'm talking about ants this morning. We're going to turn to our main scripture passage for today. It's going to be Proverbs chapter 6. You're welcome to turn there, otherwise it'll be on the board. We'll just read it once. Proverbs 6, starting in verse 6, says this. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard, and when will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief, scarcity like an armed man. Well, we just saw that illustrated quite nicely for us in that video about the ant colony. There was no master commander barking out orders to those ants. They just are wired to know how to build their impressive home, and they get after it, don't they? Diligently. At least the females do, that is. So, I know that we have all spent a substantial amount of time in our lives studying ants when we were young people, right? And so we know they just keep moving, right? They keep shifting dirt. They keep looking for food for themselves and for their fellow ants. And if you knock over their little hill, they're going to have that rebuilt by morning time. They're impressive creatures. I just imagine that Solomon also spent some time when he was a youngster studying ants, just like we do, because when it was time for him to give some wise advice about having a strong work ethic, he thought of the ant. And that is the point of that passage too, isn't it, right? If you want to be successful at living, if you want to live wisely, if you want to live in the way that God has designed you to live and desires you to live, then you will, according to Solomon, become a hard worker. There are some more Proverbs to look at on that subject, and I'll just zip through them. Chapter 10, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. From chapter 12, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. Chapter 14, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. From chapter 19, laziness brings on deep sleep and the shiftless go hungry. Chapter 20, do not love sleep or you will grow poor. Stay awake and you will have food to spare. And it's not just about working hard. Check out Proverbs 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. So hard work is still the primary element there, but I believe he's encouraging us there to work wisely. Think things through and plan things out. Don't just dive into things, and I suppose saving for retirement could come under that heading, and taking a look at life and disability insurance, especially if you have young children. You want to work smart as well as hard. Don't be hasty in your work decisions. Okay, I'm going to highlight for you the words out of all those proverbs there that were in association with wise living, and then the words that were in association with unwise living, and we'll put them on the screen. So wise living, we saw these words in those proverbs. Hard work, diligent, gathers the crops, works the land, stays awake, and unwise living, lazy, hasty, loves sleep, chases fantasies, talks about working but doesn't actually do it. By the way, I don't think that chasing fantasies there means that you shouldn't pursue your dreams. I think it does probably mean that you shouldn't go after get-rich-quick schemes, or maybe you shouldn't continue to pursue a career dream that over a very long period of time has never brought you any income. That may be what it means. Maybe more importantly there, that's encouragement not to continue to pursue a career dream when it has been made clear to you that the Lord has shut that door for you. But I think outside of those circumstances, go ahead, pursue your dreams, call upon the Lord and for direction and follow it. Well, when you do look at all those words and wise living and unwise living, it's clear that these sayings from Solomon that we are looking at here are a call upon us who follow God to have and to demonstrate a very strong work ethic. To have and to demonstrate a very strong work ethic. The definition of diligent is having or showing care and conscientiousness in one's work or duties. And then maybe we should look at a definition of conscientiousness. Conscientiousness implies a desire to do a task well. Conscientious people are efficient and organized as opposed to easygoing and disorderly. So let's sum this up. We are called to be hard workers, smart workers, workers who care about the quality of the job we are doing, workers who will strive to do things effectively and efficiently in an intentional and organized manner. I'm going to read that for you again. We are called to be hard workers and wise workers, smart workers, workers who care about the quality of the job we're doing, workers who will strive to do things effectively and efficiently in an intentional and organized manner. I think that honoring your commitments to your employer fits under that description. Showing up on time, actually showing up, not routinely sleeping or doing something else when you were supposed to be at work. Honoring your commitments applies to self-employed people as well. Honoring the commitments you've made maybe to people who work for you or who you partner with in the various aspects of your business, doing the things that you said you would do. Now, I was taught that when you quit a job, when you decide to quit a job, you put in a two-week notice and then you work hard for 2 weeks. All right, I was a coffee shop manager for Dunn Brothers and Caribou for 5 years. I'm sure that I had at least 30 people quit their job during my 5 years. And I really believe that if I actually sat down to think through names, my guess is that I could count on one hand the number of young people who actually fulfilled an entire two-week term after they gave me their notice. Typically, what happened is that I would find out that they had quit because they just stopped showing up. Or they would give me their notice and they'd start to work the 2 weeks and they would just kind of disappear there somewhere along the line. And frankly, it was a bit infuriating, a little discouraging, primarily because guess who got to work those shifts that were assigned to those people? It was yours truly, usually, turning my work week into a 60 or 70 hour week instead of a 40 or 50 hour week. Really frustrating when people don't honor their commitments. So when you quit a job, everybody, give notice and actually fulfill your 2 weeks for your employer. That would be an example of having a good work ethic and being conscientious. People with good work ethics don't just float by and do the minimum they have to do to get by. Instead, they would invest themselves in their work and in general use their time wisely and responsibly. And then we think back to the ants there and how they work hard even though they have no commanding officer prodding them. So people with a good work ethic will take ownership in what they do and they'll find a way to do it well even if the boss is absent. I think in the business world you call these people self-starters. All right? So these are examples of what a good work ethic looks like. Christ followers who are hard workers may use Colossians 3:23 as their motivation, and that verse says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as though working for the Lord, not for human masters." It's the Lord Christ you are serving. It's the Lord Christ you are serving. Man, what would that look like to actually behave in your job like Jesus was your direct boss, working to please him more than anyone else? So yeah, I think a person who is obeying God's command there by throwing themselves into their job, working at it with all of their heart as though they were working for Christ, I would say that is another example of what having a good work ethic would look like, might look like. Okay, shift gears here for a second. I have an assignment for you today. I would like you to take those sermon note sheets that you have and your pens, and jot down some thoughts for me on this subject. I want you to think about a person that you know in your life or have known in your life who most closely fits the description of having a good work ethic that we've been looking at today. And I'll put it back on the board for you again. It says, we are called to be hard workers, smart workers, workers who care about the quality of the job we are doing, workers who will strive to do things efficiently and effectively in an intentional and organized manner. So who do you know, who have you known that fits that description? Let's actually not use anyone who goes to this church, if you would. Let's choose someone from other circles in your lives, present, past, maybe your family. And you know, I need to make one more distinction here, too. I want to make sure you hear me on this one, too. So eyes on me now, eyes on me. There's a difference between having a good work ethic and being irresponsibly obsessed with your job. All right. So some people are no doubt hard workers, but they are not spending as much time as they should with other responsibilities like being at home for your family, having time for God, for your devotional time with God, and seeking to help grow his kingdom. So when you're thinking about a person to write down here, I want you to think of a positive example, all right, of someone who has that right balance between hard work and those other responsibilities in life. I'm going to give you a moment to do that, and then I'm actually going to ask for a few volunteers, and if you could, if you were willing, just two or three of you, to say who that person is, maybe also tell us some things about them, describe that work ethic, maybe a story you remember, or the results that came about from their lives, what they meant to you. All right, you get it. So take a couple minutes, look at your definition there of good work ethic, and then we'll ask for a couple volunteers. All right, hopefully that's enough time. Hey, any good stories or a couple people that want to share who they have observed in their lives with great work ethic. So, Christy, thanks.
My former boss, who I worked with for over 11 years, was very, very disciplined in what he was doing. He was the controller of our company. And knowing that the other portions of our work, the accounts payable and accounts receivable and the payroll, all had to work together as a team in order for him to get his job done. So he was counting on us through discipline to go through the motions with our jobs in order for him to do his job. Mm-hmm. So it was, he had a very analytical thought process on, if you came to him with a question, he would be able to sit there and think about it and give you an answer, and it was the right answer usually, you know, 95% of the time. So I have to give kudos to him for helping me along, striving for stopping and thinking about things before saying something.
Yeah.
And also just learning more about the analytical process to a problem.
So, okay, so he would not be falling under that hasty category. A good example of working wisely. Anybody else have an example that they're thinking of? Like, I've known a lot of good, I've known a lot of people with good work ethic. It's kind of hard to think of someone that you know, stands way above everybody else, although I did hear from many people that my grandpa actually worked harder after he retired than he had before. He retired and then he got himself involved in like 5-10 other things. So here you are.
I had a really good friend when I was in Colorado, and she was retired by the time that I came to know her, but seemed to have a really good balance of just loving people as they came into the church and also loving her family and caring for her. She had a husband that couldn't hear very good and couldn't really get around all that good anymore, but was a really good example of caring for her family and her grown kids and their grandkids and stuff, and also reaching out to the community and loved the Lord very much and was very open about sharing her faith with everybody that I could tell that she had anything to do with. So,
all right. Balanced. Thanks. I would take one more. Yeah, Lenny?
Well, nobody knows her, but she's my little sister, Brenda. She's raised her two daughters by herself. She's one of the most studious workers and organized people that I can think of. And even now, as she's had a mastectomy and went through chemotherapy, she still runs her home cleaning service, taking care of her clients and putting those people first before her own needs, even though she's going through all kinds of pain and suffering, can't keep food down and whatnot. She doesn't let anything get her down, and she seriously does it as though she's working for the Lord. She knows about Christ, but she doesn't know Christ. And it'll come. Prayers are answered.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Lenny. Well, thanks for the stories. I would imagine that these people that you wrote down, you have positive associations, right? Respect for these people. And you can probably see the results of in their lives of that work ethic. So let's define that a little bit more. It kind of gives us some clues right there as to this next question, which is why would God ask us to have a good work ethic? Well, Solomon mentioned in a few of those Proverbs that we looked at just a moment ago that the obvious one, that if you work hard, you'll obtain provision for yourself and for those who depend upon you. Whereas if you don't work hard, you might go hungry. So that's just a, you know, kind of a basic one. You work hard, you get provision. The phrase, love your neighbor as yourself, comes to my mind here. Think about that. If you're an irresponsible employee, are you showing love to the person who is your boss? If you're someone who does not honor your commitments, are you showing love to the people you made those commitments to or to your coworkers? If a person decides that they would rather not work, but that it would be preferential just to live off of government welfare, and I am not talking now about people who legitimately are on those programs. I'm talking about people who really could work, but they choose not to. Is that demonstrating love for your fellow citizen? Or have you now asserted your own selfish desires above the concern for the other, expecting other people to give their hard-earned money to bail you out? So I think that would not only be irresponsible, but it would be unloving. We're to put the other's concern above our own, says the Bible. If there's a bunch of work to be done and you just kind of wait for someone else to do it because you feel lazy, have you put the concerns of others above your own concerns? No, the right thing to do there would be to try to do your part, right? To take on, maybe take on the task so the other person doesn't have to do it. And of course, you got to remember to have healthy boundaries. You can take on too many tasks. You got to have healthy boundaries for your own life. But the impulse, I think, should be there to help and to jump to it and to try to take it on yourself. That would be putting the other person's concern above your own. So why should God ask us to have a good work ethic? There's two things. You'll obtain provision that you need to survive, and because we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. I also think we were just designed to do stuff and not sit around. We're healthier people when we have a task that is meaningful to us and when we're able to get out of bed in the morning, go do hard work, achieving a desired result. I think this brings health to our lives. And the fact that it brings health to our lives is a good indicator that we were designed that way. We were designed for that. To do stuff, to work, to create things, to take care of things. Genesis 2, verse 15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it, to take care of it. This is part of our DNA. So God asks us to have a good work ethic because in doing so, our needs will be provided for, we'll demonstrate love for those around us, and because we were designed by God to do stuff, we'll be healthier people when we're working hard. Okay, let's apply this to our individual lives and individual situations now. Some of you out there are stay-at-home moms. Well, that is your job, isn't it? And a hugely important one at that, raising children, maintaining a household. So, yeah, yes, you have a job, even though you don't get a paycheck from an employer. These things can be applied to you, these things we're talking about today. Some of you here are in situations where your physical bodies are not healthy enough to allow you to work in the classic sense. You have some limitations on what you can do work-wise. Some of you are retired and not in the workforce anymore, and maybe you also have some physical limitations as well. Well, you know what? I think that this good work ethic is really more about an attitude that you can take with you no matter what your situation is. For most of you, I would guess if you are able to focus less on what you can't do and more on the question, what can I do? I'll bet that you can come up with some pretty decent answers to that question, and many of you do this well already. You can ask, what can I do for my neighbors or for my community or for my church? How can I still demonstrate a good work ethic even though I don't have an official job? What can I get involved in so I won't sleep the day away, as Solomon has warned us against here? And you know what? If you want to brainstorm some ideas with me, there's usually some things to do around here. So we never lack for tasks in the church. Come and talk to me. I'll brainstorm with you. By the way, we all do have a job, even if we don't have a job. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Jesus gave that job to all of us. And we should be applying our good work ethic to that task as well, and its many facets. I can think of a few examples of people, of the many, many people who have demonstrated an exceptional work ethic when it came to fulfilling this command of Christ to spread the good news. The Apostle Paul comes to mind. Dedicated, hard worker, missionary Hudson Taylor, Elizabeth Elliot. Oh, you could go on and on and on. Well, we all have that job, whether or not we have a career. Okay, so now let's look in at that description of a strong work ethic again. And why don't you now note on your sheets there in that final spot, jot down for your own use now, perhaps, ways in which you are meeting the description in your life, ways in which you might be falling short I'll read it again as you're reflecting here. We are called to be hard workers, smart workers, workers who care about the quality of the job we're doing, workers who will strive to do things effectively and efficiently in an intentional and organized manner. How are you lining up to that description? And if you're feeling some conviction that maybe you're falling short in some of those areas, write down something that you're going to make a commitment to change. What specific thing will you do differently moving forward? You can make that commitment today. Well, I hope that you feel that all of this has been said in love. That's the intention. You know, God, He meets us where we are at, right? We are all works in progress. God meets us exactly where we are at, and He loves us with an immense love right then. And He recognizes the good things in us. He gives us grace for our shortcomings. And then He comes alongside and asks us in love to make the changes that we need to be making in our lives to improve. And you know what? That's what this is about today. That's what most of our sermons are about. Looking into God's Word, finding out how He desires us to live. And when we submit and follow His teachings, we discover that His Word is true, right? And that it really was the best thing for us after all. So someday here in the near future, when you are feeling the pull of laziness or you're just having a difficult time getting motivated to do your work, I hope that you will consider the ant, that strong, diligent, and selfless worker, and that you will remember Solomon's words from the book of Proverbs, which contain God's call for us all to be hard workers. This is another aspect in that overall picture of what is wise living. May we hear and apply these things. Amen.